This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
The Inch Podcast is back for the 2010-2011 season. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, Inch Podcast host. This Inch Podcast is recorded Tuesday, October 26th, 2010. Pleased to welcome in Inch editor Mike Idlebus. Hello, Bus.
Welcome to the hockey season, folks.
Welcome to the hockey season. And WCHA senior writer and longtime podcast contributor, Jess Myers. Hi, Jess.
Hi, guys. 2 weeks ago, I would have told you it seems too early for hockey season, but tonight is one of those cold, windy, nasty fall nights in Minnesota, so now it actually feels like hockey season.
Oh, it's 70 degrees in upstate New York.
It's been that way all fall here until tonight, so now we can go.
Jess, you had an uncomfortable experience recently where you traveled east of Chicago. How did things look on this coast from a WCJ perspective?
I got to hang out in New York City for a few days. I saw a friend of Inch and a friend of college hockey, Billy Jaffe, and had a nice time. I think NYU needs a programmer. We need somebody in that market, don't we?
Yeah, like Princeton, Yale, Quinnipiac. Anyway, Army.
Princeton's not in New York City.
It's closer than the
Army's up the river there somewhere.
And happy anniversary to you and your lovely wife.
Thank you. And we met at the deck, or had our first date at the deck, so it's only appropriate that we talk about her on a college hockey podcast.
And now the deck is done.
Yeah.
Your marriage lives on.
As far as I know. I'll let you know.
All right, let's get into some college hockey discussion with a debate that was a little bit tough to put together on a Sunday night bus, as you and I, along with some of our writers, tried to put together the Inch Power Rankings. Boston College, defending national champions, rampant winners over Denver on a road weekend, had their first setback, a 2-1 loss at Notre Dame, and we had to make a call. Were they number one or were they not? And we decided on BC, and that was unanimous between the two of us. What did you like best about the Eagles holding on to that spot?
Well, I think that, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point in time. The Denver series was really quite impressive. I mean, obviously that Friday night game, and Denver's, filling a lot of holes, obviously, and had a lot of kids, key components from last year leave. But they got a lot of talent still left in that lineup. And BC just went out there and handled them with ease on Friday night. Saturday night was a little tougher, but, they got the shutout. I know it's cliche to say, but when you get Boston College and Notre Dame together, you kind of have to throw out the record books. I mean, it has evolved over the years into a pretty nice rivalry. And for whatever reason, it seems that the team that that comes in as the underdog is the one that prevails. For Boston College to come in there and play a one-off, and it sounds like they got their best effort from the Irish up and down the lineup that night. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point in time. I think that ultimately BC will bear itself out as the number one team over time. I'm gonna stick with that.
I expect the same. And one thing that came true for me and may fit in with some of the teams that we talk about that follow BC in the power rankings and in the national polls, I discount home wins a little bit in October. It's hard to go on the road and win, especially early, when it's maybe your first road trip. And for a North Dakota team that hasn't played a home game yet, whereas Miami has played a lot of home games, mm-hmm. and they're, when you're basically deciding between Miami and Boston College, Miami's only loss was a home loss you know, against a very good team in New Hampshire, but it was at home. BC's only loss is a road loss, and it was against another very good team, a peer team. You know, New Hampshire, Notre Dame are probably very even. So that to me makes a difference there. And then Miami went on the road to St. Cloud State, team that's still trying to find itself, I think, early in this part of the season. And they had a win and a tie up there, but that to me was why we had BC first. Not discrediting Miami, certainly very impressive and a phenomenal, overwhelming weekend against Northern Michigan this past weekend. And I can't expect anything different this coming weekend when Miami plays at home again against Lake Superior State. So,
yeah, I think this Notre Dame team. I haven't seen them, but I've been following them fairly closely this season. I think they've got a chance to be a pretty good team. Maybe not ultimately as good as a BC or a Miami, but maybe in that second tier. Just depending, you know, they've got a ton of young kids. I think they have, you know, 12 freshmen on their roster, something like that. But if that group can grow together and continue to play at the level at which they're playing, I think they've got a chance to be a pretty decent team.
Yeah, I think they're.
I think their ceiling is higher than New Hampshire's. I mean, just.
I agree with that.
So.
Well, I'll get a better look in New Hampshire on Friday, but Jess, let's talk about Minnesota Duluth. 5-0-1 on the year. Again, another team that's played a lot at home, and they're getting the wins. Have they really been tested yet? That's kind of the question mark that Bus and I were left with when we're putting together the power rankings. But at the same time, we've always said you can only win the games that are on your schedule, and they've done a nice job of that so far.
I guess it would be easy to argue that they haven't had much of a test yet, and you know that's not to necessarily insult Providence or Alaska Anchorage, the two teams they've played at home. They started the season with that Superior Cup or Superior Challenge or whatever it's called.
Showcase.
And kind of got out of the gate weird with a 6-6 tie at Lake Superior.
Exactly.
You know, and since then they've won all the games on their schedule. You know, a few, you know, slightly bigger tests coming up in the coming weeks. They go to Bemidji State this weekend, which is, you know, quickly becoming a rivalry game, and those are WCHA points on the line now for the first time. And then they go to North Dakota after that, and that may be a real telling series, depending on, you know, what happens.
I think in
happens.
Both directions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, depending on what happens to North Dakota in the coming few games too. I mean, that's suddenly a team that needs to get a few wins under its belt where, you know, things were supposed to maybe come a little easier. The Sioux have Denver at home this weekend and then, you know, follow that right up with the Bulldogs. So, two pretty emotional weekends for the North Dakota fans too.
The one lingering question I have about Duluth, and I mentioned it in the poll outrage, and, you know, it's not an outrage to expect Duluth to get some first place votes in the two voter driven polls, but just, you know, if you size up the competition they've played versus BC and Miami and even BU, it's not quite at that level. And again, that's, you know, no disrespect to Providence and Northern Michigan and Alaska Anchorage and Lake State, but it's just the truth that those teams aren't at the level as the opponents that Miami and BC and BU have played to date.
Right.
The one question that I have, other than, you know, the schedule obviously will as UMD goes on will strengthen. The one issue or question or concern I have about Duluth is their goaltending, and I'm not 100% sure. You know, they can score a ton, but do they have the guys in goal who can pick up the slack on those occasions when the scoring's not there?
I saw a pretty prominent NHL scout on Friday night up at the deck, and I saw him again last night at the XL Energy Center, and just said, "Hey, what'd you think of
Bobby Carpenter?"
No, I will say this: he is a UMD grad and a Hobie winner, so that narrows it down to four. I can't say anymore. I said, "What do you think of the Bulldogs?" And he said, "You know,
Jerome Butler,
a lot of scoring." Yeah, yes, it was Jerome Butler. Wow, you win! I can't remember which year he won the Hobie, but I'm pretty sure I was there.
Caracas.
Yeah, no, I saw Craig Karakas on Friday. He's the color voice of Bulldog Radio.
Wow. All right, let's go. What's your sentence?
Okay. This person said, you know, I like their offense. Their goaltending is the question mark. So Hobie winners agree with you, Bus. And that was after seeing Kenny Reiter, who's been, you know, their regular goalie for the last year and a half or so, play on Friday night, a 3-2 game that they won in overtime. And by all rights, you know, Alaska Anchorage maybe deserved a little better fate. They outplayed UMD for good stretches that game. Anchorage is a big team, and they use their size to their full advantage on that small ice sheet. The next night, Saturday night, Aaron Crandall got the start. He's a freshman out of the Twin Cities suburbs and got a shutout. And Crandall is a kid who was a very good prep goalie. He had committed, I believe, to Wisconsin, and then they withdrew their offer to him, and he was looking for a team and now is with the Bulldogs. So that's where they are in goal.
Got to salute Minnesota Duluth. No matter who you're playing against, it's hard to score goals in college hockey, and they've got 30 goals in six games. So five red lights a night is a good way to go, especially losing a guy like Rob Bortson after they did last year, and they're a good team.
Justin Fontaine averaging 2 points a game, which is not a bad little clip to start off with.
No.
Here's something that just popped into my mind when you talked about that dinky little ice sheet in the deck, in the current deck. With the new rink being built adjacent to the current one, you know, and I'm assuming that that's a legitimate size rink.
NHL size, 200 by 85.
I wonder if any team has ever switched rink sizes in the middle of a season like that. You know, that's kind of odd to think about.
Didn't the Badgers make a December transition?
Did they do that?
Yeah,
they moved into the Kohl Center midseason. I know, and this is going back 20 years, but St. Cloud State, when they opened the National Hockey Center, went from a standard size rink to an Olympic size rink midseason. They were not in a conference at the team, so it didn't affect, you know, conference standings or anything like that. But
I guess not that it would be a big deal for Duluth. Obviously, I mean they play in normal size rinks all the time.
Yeah, they play everywhere.
Except when Colorado
College had to do that too, didn't they? I mean, the Broadmoor World Arena had to be, they were a Cadet Ice Arena then.
Yeah,
they moved to the. Yeah, that's right. Forget it. Disregard.
Well, this predates Inch too, but on the East Coast, I know Clarkson did a midseason transition from Walker to Chiel.
Difference size.
I think New Hampshire with Snively and Whitmore. Did it? Okay.
That was a midseason.
I think I'm just guessing. I mean, that was almost 20 years ago now. But Duluth will be fine.
I know they'll be fine. It's just interesting that, you know, they play on that postage stamp of a sheet,
a curling sheet.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
And it's like the warm up rink at Ferris or Miami. You know, with the guys they have, obviously, you know, they should prosper with the extra space.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to another team, Bus, that you and I considered in tandem a little bit with Minnesota Duluth, and that's Boston University. Another team, undefeated, one tie, definitely a stronger schedule. They won the icebreaker in St. Louis, beat Notre Dame. Tie was against Northeastern, which doesn't look very good right now. But the Terriers are undefeated right now and have gotten a big spike in our Orange Power rankings. I kind of like their number one votes a little more than Duluth, but I still have them both behind BC and Miami at this point of the year. BU, I think, has an opportunity right now to kind of grab that second spot in Hockey East. I mean, that's going to be a great race this year. If the Notre Dame victory over BC maybe shows a little bit of an opportunity against the Eagles, Maine's very good, Boston U's very good, and New Hampshire has potential to be very good. That might be a fun race to watch this year.
Yeah, no question about it. I watched a lot of the game, the BU UMass game the other night on Friday night. that BU ended up winning. And, you know, I think they're a lot like Notre Dame in some respects, maybe just a tick above them as far as maybe having a little bit more experience and a little bit more proven guys in their lineup. But, they, you know, there are some similarities. A lot of young guys on that BU team. Obviously, they're replacing a bunch of people from last year.
Tons.
And it just, you know, from it seems like that, you know, they're playing pretty well from what I saw. But, you know, that I think the thing that I came away with was that they hadn't hit their stride. You know, maybe there was something, a little something missing that they just weren't quite up fulfilling their potential. You know, I think that they, I think that they could play better than what I saw. And UMass, I think, played a great game. And I know their record doesn't, obviously, isn't real sterling right now, but I thought UMass looked pretty good too.
Yeah, BU's in a tough spot, and we cited in the Inch Power Rankings that they're living on a very narrow band of margin of error. They've got 4-1 goal wins and a tie. You know, a goal post here and a bad bounce there, and they could be just as easily 0-4-1 as 4-0-1. So the Terriers have done a nice job, and I think there's something to be said when you win these types of games early in the year, that you're more comfortable in those situations once the league schedule starts cranking up, once you get into the hard part of the season in January and February, where it's tough to get really invested in those kinds of games. So I think it bodes well for BU right now that they're getting those types of wins. Maine, I think, overall, is just flat-out more impressive than BU because they're more dynamic.
From a talent standpoint.
Straight-out talent standpoint. I really like what I've seen. I watched the Black Bears the last two weekends. Once at Michigan State, and then Friday night when they really just blew out North Dakota. I mean, bottom line, they buried them early. And granted, everything went in that night. North Dakota's goaltending wasn't terrific, but Maine took advantage of their opportunities and really took advantage of a great crowd at Alphont. I think Maine is a tournament team, and I think going back 2 weeks, I think Michigan State's a tournament team, too. I expect to see both of those teams in the national tournament at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Michigan State's margin of error is a little bit thinner than Maine's.
Well, it goes in both directions.
Right.
Michigan State has a goalie that can erase that margin of error, and Maine has goalies that can increase that margin of error.
Right. And, you know, that's the big difference, you know. You know, Maine has, I would say, has superior depth and, you know.
Maine's explosive. Like, they can get three in a row.
They can score a ton, yeah. But, you know, like you said, Michigan State has Palmisano, who's, you know, as we talked earlier, I think it was either earlier this week or late last week, he's probably one of the 10 best goalies in the country.
I think he's one of the 5 best.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be, you know, Michigan State's got some good but not great players, I think. Whereas
Maine has great players.
Explosive difference makers. But, you know, as I saw, and I was at that Friday game at Michigan State where Maine lost, and you know, they just kind of seemed to sleepwalk through that game. And I don't know if that's, you know, a problem or, you know, they just expected to show up and win. Obviously, that wasn't a problem this past weekend because they showed up and just really put the screws to North Dakota. But they didn't have a lot of jump on that Friday night.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Is Maine, you know, having gotten some consideration for the Hobie last year, is it Gustav Nyquist's show, or is it more to it than that with Maine?
There's more there.
There's a lot more there.
Just three lines deep. Two very, very good lines, and then their third line's pretty good. They have two or three defensemen that can really move the puck and make plays in Will O'Neill, Jeff Diamond, those kinds of guys. There's more. It's not Nyquist and others. There's some legit guys there. Tanner House is phenomenal. Brian Flynn is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, we could throw this out there. Maybe it's time for the next podcast to do that, but is there a better line in college hockey than Flynn, House, and Nyquist?
Yeah, well.
Duluth might argue with that.
But Duluth could. BC could. I mean,
Miami.
I would think Miami could. I mean, yeah, but they're, it's a conversation.
No, yeah.
It's not a blowout, so.
And what is a college hockey podcast if not a conversation?
Oh, that's what we do here.
That's why we're here.
We're here to talk college hockey. And thank you to everybody for listening to the debut inch podcast of the 2010-11 season. Let's talk about some teams that we're still trying to figure out. One of those for me, and I'm going to call on you guys out west to maybe help sort that out a little bit, is Wisconsin. Obviously ravaged by departures, graduations, et cetera, after last year's Frozen Four run. They've had a kind of a tough run here. I mean, going to Denver isn't really the easiest trip to start the season with, but to make early in the year, I should say. But
it started with BU. You know, they got the Terriers right off the bat in St. Louis, got beat in a close game. Had an Alabama-Huntsville series at home from which I don't think anybody learned anything. Except for the fact that the second game was played on a Sunday afternoon at 2 while the Packers were playing. A friend of mine joked if the Wisconsin TV broadcast had 100 viewers when they tuned in, you know, at the start, they would be amazed, but I don't know who scheduled that. We talked a little bit about North Dakota and Minnesota Duluth coming up in 2 weeks as a series where both teams will be looking to prove something. I kind of look at this weekend's series, Michigan Tech going to Wisconsin, as that same kind of series. Wisconsin obviously wants to prove that they can bounce back after last season's losses. And I guess Michigan Tech's obviously got something to prove, too. They've started off undefeated. They're, I think, 3-0-2. And congratulations to Jamie Russell. Nice start for them. We joked a little bit on Twitter about the inch A to Z reverse jinx. And Steven Saigo from Michigan Tech, obviously one who's benefiting from that. He's leading the Huskies in scoring right now. So I will be very interested to see what comes out of Madison this weekend and see if one of these teams or both of these teams is legit.
It's not a reverse jinx. That's why we do it. Seriously, that's why.
No, that's true.
We're trying to pump our own tires, but you know, maybe we kind of know what we're talking about a little bit.
Yeah.
Speaking of Wisconsin, I told Bus this earlier this week, but I saw Tom Gilbert play for the Oilers last week. Somebody noted he's in his fifth year with the Oilers, and I'm thinking I interviewed him for Inch A to Z. God, are we old or what?
Kyle Wilson scored an NHL goal for the Columbus Blue Jackets last night. We did him the first year of AC. Colgate's Kyle Wilson. Yeah.
Still paying dividends all these years later.
Hey, he got the benefit. He got the bounce. Yeah.
It's unbelievable to see some of the names that you see on NHL rosters now.
I mean, yeah. Well, Mason Raymond, that was another one that I interviewed for AC. Exactly. And yeah. He's had a nice little cup of coffee with the Canucks.
He got mentioned on How I Met Your Mother.
That's right.
Now, that's a key highlight for anybody.
The opposite of name dropping was the line.
How? How about, Bus, let's go back to something we wrote about in First Shift. And as you're listening to this, if you haven't read the Inch First Shift for week 3, pull
what's
this up.
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you, number one? And number two, pull it up for some context. We'll give you the Cliff's Notes here. Notre Dame, BC, they played Saturday night in South Bend. Notre Dame had a 2-1 third period lead. BC, obviously explosive, dangerous, deep talented forwards, was on a power play. And Riley Sheehan from Notre Dame had a breakaway while shorthanded while killing that penalty, and he was hauled down and the officials awarded a penalty shot, but Notre Dame's coaching staff elected not to take the penalty shot, which is well within the stipulations of the rule book, and decided to instead make the BC defenseman that pulled them down serve the 2 minutes. What that did for Notre Dame was allowed them to play about a minute 45 on 4-on-4 instead of taking your chance with the penalty shot. And in case it didn't go in, which I think the average in the NHL shootouts is about 40% success rate, but you get that manpower advantage. So even if you score, BC still goes back on the power play, and it might not gain that much of an advantage. Phenomenal call, I thought, by Jeff Jackson and the Notre Dame coaching staff.
Oh, yeah, no question. You know, hockey's a game where you don't really see those kind of coaching decisions come into play often, just because of the pace of the game and that type of thing. And it was an intriguing call and a brilliant call. We both agreed. But, you know, the other question it brought up would be how many coaches nationwide would have the I guess the fortitude, for lack of a better term, to make that same decision in a similar situation. You know, you're talking about, a one-on-one chance to get a goal and go up by two goals. But, you know, as you said, with the kind of offense BC has, you know, they can erase that lead in 30 seconds.
Right.
He played
to his strengths. I think two things stand out. He plays to his strengths. You know, actually three things stand out. He plays to the strength of his team. He shortens the game by going 4-on-4. And also, you know, if Sheehan misses that shot, you know, that's momentum for BC.
Right. And they're on the power play for another 90 seconds.
Exactly. That's what I was going to ask. Is it a comment on Riley Sheehan at all? Does he look at who's going to take the penalty shot and weigh, you know, how good that particular player is in breakaway situations?
I think in a tie game it is, but not when you're in the third period with a one-goal lead.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I'm not questioning the decision. I think it was
Gabrich or Ovechkin or Crosby or whoever. You know, it's.
I'm with you guys. I think it was a brilliant decision. I'm just wondering if that may have factored in.
I talked about this, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I talked about this with an ECAC hockey coach. It's got to be 4 or 5 years ago. It goes back a ways. And I don't know if his team was in the situation where that rule might have come into play, or I read about it in a different game, and it could have been out west. You know, it could have been a CC Air Force game, for all I know, where something similar could have happened. And I just was, you know, in the rink that night, and I said, have you ever thought about this? What would you do if you were in that situation? And his answer was, it would, in this day and age of college hockey, it would be really hard to turn down a scoring opportunity because they're so few and they're so rare to come by. And that made sense to me. But I think in this case with Notre Dame, it was the right play. And if it was a tie game, it's a whole different scenario. I mean, obviously you take the chance, but being in that game situation and being prepared to make that call was, to me, the most impressive part. It wasn't the guts to make the call. It wasn't, you know, it was being ready for that game situation in that particular moment and making the decision that was most impressive to me.
That Jeff Jackson may know a little bit about this game. I'm convinced. Just looking at his records.
You know what? It's funny. You talk about the great coaches and the, you know, and what I wrote that segment of the first shift for this week, and I said, coaches can prepare teams, they can give game plans, they can get players ready, but hockey is 99% of the time decided by what the players do. You know, how does the goalie play? How do you get the puck off the glass? You know, but there's only a few times when coaches can make that kind of impact, whether it's a timeout, whether it's a goalie change, whether it's pulling the goalie, and I go back to the 2001 Albany Frozen with Dean Blaze. You know, it's like, gotta have that opportunity and know and take advantage of it and make those, give your team a chance to be successful. And that's what Jeff Jackson and the Notre Dame staff did this week.
Yeah, that's, you know, and getting back to the question, and, you know, we kind of speculated a little bit earlier this week, we kind of try to put a percentage on it. How many coaches would do the same thing in the same situation under the circumstances? You thought a lot of coaches would think about it, but not many would take the chance.
Exactly.
I think most coaches would, you know, kind of buying into the argument of, well, scoring chances are so rare that you kind of have to take that opportunity when you get it. I think that would be that most coaches would kind of lean toward that mindset. So I don't know.
Does it turn into football coach syndrome? I'm going to get criticized for not doing the regular thing instead of being an independent thinker.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, what's the safe?
A lot of it.
We had a penalty shot. We got to take a penalty shot.
Well, I think some of it depends on where you're coaching. You know.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Like you noted though too, how safe a play is that? I mean, best case scenario, you go up 3-1 on BC with 13 minutes left.
Yeah,
that's
best case.
That's nothing.
And they're on the power play. Yeah,
BC's offense can erase that in 2 shifts.
Exactly.
Maybe a shift and a half.
Yeah, so. 1 shift.
Yeah.
Plus, I wonder what it says to the team that, you know, he has confidence in his guys to play even strength against Boston College. I mean, that's got to be a pretty good feeling where your coach says, you know what, we got a 1-goal lead. We can play 5-on-5 with these guys and right. We'll be fine. It's a pretty good indicator of what he thinks he has in his locker room, that's for sure.
And that goes a long way later in the year.
Yeah.
Going back to Herb Brooks in 1980 and way before that, I mean, you got a 1-goal lead late in the game. They say, keep playing hockey. Play your game. Don't do anything different. You know, and this is what they did. We'll match them even up. We'll play hockey and we'll win.
There you go.
Right, and that's what, you know, obviously that's what Notre Dame wants to do. They want to play even strength and play their systems and, you know, they're good in that shutdown mode. They can be.
What's going on with Notre Dame's goaltending right now? I'm not criticizing them. I don't know who's in there now.
Notre Dame?
Yeah. Let me look it up here. Mike Johnson. Yeah, we talked about
Mike
him for player
Johnson
of the week.
Is the goalie. Yeah.
Sophomore,
he's
four
the goalie.
Games. 4-0.
4-0, yeah. Steve Summerhays played, you know, he was a freshman coming in, and he had a pretty good USHL career. He's only made one start. Johnson's another USHL kid who's a sophomore, and you know, he was uneven last year. He ended up, you know, by the end of the season being their guy, their number one guy. Started 29 games, or played 29 games, I should say. You know, he didn't have a sparkling record, but he had a decent, you know, he stopped 91% of his shots. And he's not a big guy. He's, you know, an average-sized goalie of just a tick under 6 feet. But, you know, he's been good this year so far. He's, you know, he's his save percentage is just a hair above 93%. So, you know, and in that, you know, in the style they play, he doesn't, you know, you typically think that he's not going to see a ton of shots since Notre Dame, you know, plays that Jeff Jackson system that's, you know, so good defensively. But, you know, he's faced, looking at his stats right now, he's faced 120 shots in 4 games. So, you know, so he's seen a little bit of rubber.
Yeah. Let me let me bring up a new topic here, and this is relative to the last two seasons. We've had two surprising Frozen Four teams in 2009 in Bemidji State and in 2010 with RIT. With that success comes a burden and a target the following year. Last year, Bemidji rolled out 10-1-1 in their first 12 games, whereas RIT this year is 0-4-1. I think for the Tigers this year with RIT, there's two factors. The guys they lost were more significant than the guys that Bemidji State lost last season at this time. And RIT's played a pretty good schedule here. I mean, they played St. Cloud, Nebraska, Omaha. They were on the road at Rensselaer and Union, two of the projected top four preseason teams in ECAC hockey. RIT also started slowly last year and really turned things around, but I think we're seeing the impact of losing guys like Jared DeMichael and Dan Ringwald on that team from last year with RIT. So, just
looking at their schedule coming up, too, I mean, they've got some tough stuff.
You know, they're road at Cornell games. Saturday. At Cornell. Robert they Morris was undefeated this weekend, yeah.
They go out to Air Force for one game. Boy, that's good scheduling. Fly out there for one game and fly back. That's, well, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, go figure, Jess. A league expanded its membership and had weird scheduling quirks.
I'm just saying, geographically. Yeah, whatever.
I mean, yeah, but yeah, it's unfortunate for the West New York.
Call Scott Owens. He'll give you a game. You know, do something.
Oh, they have that lined up later in the year, I think. No, it's a different team. But
anyway.
Yeah, but anyway, but. Yeah,
Robert Morris still undefeated too.
Robert Morris is in the inch power ranking.
Bobby Moe,
hottest team in Pennsylvania for now.
You know what, Bus? Let's talk about Robert Morris. Recalled it. You know, inch power rankings, national polls, whatever. A team doesn't move up just because the team moved up. You know. Comments this week, Robert Morris, we didn't even play last week, and we moved up to 19th. Well, actually, what happened was St. Cloud State moved down.
Right.
And you have to go in one direction, you know?
Yeah.
And Cornell moves down. Well, how did Michigan State move up 5 points with a tie or if you want to call it a shootout loss and a win against Alaska? Well, their wins over Maine, or win and tie against Maine, got a lot more valuable.
Exactly.
After Maine took apart North Dakota the same weekend. So.
Yeah, I think it comes up every year we talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to talk about it. But there's more to it than just your team. It's not your team for 6 days, and then tell me what happens. It's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on around it.
It doesn't occur in a vacuum, is the way I like to think of it.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's
just wanted to get that on the record.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Let's talk about Nebraska Omaha.
Speaking of guys that can apparently coach a little bit.
Yeah.
If 2 years ago you would have told Nebraska Omaha you're going to join the WCHA and your first four road games are going to be two at Mariucci, two at Yost, we need you to win three of the four. Oh, yeah, no problem. And then they did.
Michigan wouldn't have been in the WCHA.
Yeah, but still.
I got you. I get your point. But yeah, they're playing well.
Yeah. Big game. Yeah,
you and I have been working south on Minnesota, though.
Well, that's the topic for an entirely own podcast. Exactly. We don't need to. We don't
need to. Put sand in that wound.
Yeah, how would you like to be at that school? Football team, mess. Hockey team, I don't know if it's a mess, but it's...
It ain't what it's supposed to be.
It's unkempt.
It's below expectations.
Well, that's putting it mildly.
Although the expectations are always sky high, so... Yeah.
So,
silver medalist or bronze medalist of... The Inch Tweet of the Week feature on First Shift. Paul Rovnak, a friend of Binge. Yeah, we've gotten now. Tweeted after Sunday afternoon's victory over St. Cloud State. Minnesota gets a gritty win. Whenever I see gritty or clutch or dirty or whatever, I think of, you know, the baseball sense of it. And I'm like, okay, so Minnesota is now David Eckstein. They used to be Albert Pujols. Like, what happened here? You know? We don't need gritty. We need gophers, you know? The likes of the Leopolds and Vaniks and Patonis and those kinds of guys. It's like, eh, maybe.
Remember those days?
Yeah, remember the good old days? So, I don't know. Right, whatever.
It's good. Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that. I don't know. Where is Minnesota this weekend?
Minnesota is going to visit Colorado College this weekend, going on the road for the first time.
You know what? That's good for both schools.
I think so.
Telling weekend. We'll see what
both with plenty to prove, just like some other series we mentioned.
Yeah, we've got CC kind of on the bub right now for the Inch Power rankings. Might get there.
We kind of glossed over Omaha a little bit because we got derailed by Gopher Talk. They've got. I'm trying to count on the stats right now. Seven guys through six games who have 6 points or more.
That'll work.
Yeah, that'll work.
They're a big team, and they work their butts off on every shift. That's I like that club. I like them a lot.
You said butts.
I did say butts.
That's awesome.
I was, referring to Bill Butters, Wisconsin's assistant coach, but anyway.
Yeah, I think that they're legit. I mean, they're going to, again, you know, as with Duluth, I don't know about their goaltending. You know, I think John Faulkner, who's a sophomore, is capable. Whether he can be more than capable, I don't know. Or whether he has to be more than capable, I don't know.
Yeah.
A good work rate and size and being able to finish at one end of the rink. You don't need to be anything more than capable in goal.
Right.
Alex Hudson,
Inch A to Z guy.
Inch A to Z guy got the game winner in their first WCHA game. So shout out to him and congratulations.
9 points. In six games.
Yeah. All right.
Rich Burslow has 10.
Let's deteriorate.
No, I thought you were going to talk about, speaking of goalies who haven't been adequate.
My man.
We talked about goalies at schools nickname, you know, whose initials are ND. Well, let's stay on that topic.
Eidsness. Get it going, Brad, man.
Brad Eidsness.
Yeah. My Little League batting average was higher than his current save percentage.
I was going to say his save percentage is lower than Josh Hamilton's OPS.
Exactly.
762.
He's been yanked from three games, I think. Out of three. Or out of two. I mean, he's been yanked from two out of three.
Wow.
The shell is under number three.
Yeah. No, I think he's been yanked from one.
No, he got yanked against Maine. He got yanked against Anchorage up there the first night.
I'm looking at his stats. Both, you know, they've played six games. Both goalies have three starts. But Dell has played in four games. Eidsness has only played in three.
Okay, I guess then that.
So.
Well, the first night against Anchorage, you know, he might not.
Yeah, was that the 5-5 game?
He didn't get yanked, but he had a 5-1 lead, and it ended 5-5, yeah. That was a problem there. And he had 18 saves on 23 shots.
And what was he on Friday?
Friday at Maine, like 15 minutes and bye-bye. I got it here. 9 minutes, 37 seconds, two goals against, Two saves, three goals against. That's a 40. He's the first guy to hit 400 since George Brett.
Ouch. Ouch.
It's Ted Williams, I mean.
Ted Williams.
We kid because we care, right?
Brett Eisenis, a guy who really earned our respect last season, was a huge part of Notre Dame's success. Sorry, North Dakota's success. And
if they played Notre Dame this year, he might be a huge part of Notre Dame's
success. Too easy. Just too easy.
But I mean, he really was. And we reflected that in the preseason, our preseason All-Americans. We had Eisenis as a second-team All-American. Hasn't played like it this year. Could. Absolutely could. So, that's it.
Here's the great thing about his numbers. 762. No, 762 goals against a 4.5, and he's 1-0-1.
That's a good point.
Because he got yanked, and then, you know, North Dakota ended up scoring three goals, so, you know, he couldn't get the loss.
Teflon Eisenis.
You got Felix Hernandez.
Exactly.
He's struggling. And I know Gladdy won goalie, since we're on that topic. One guy you want to talk about is the newcomer at Cornell, and a kid that we had number one in our recruiting rankings, Andy Isles.
Yeah, he's an interesting story because of the position he plays at the university where he plays. You know, Cornell's goaltending legacy is obviously very strong over the last 15 years, and even longer than that. Now, here's a kid who's coming in as a 19-year-old freshman, a townie, grew up in Ithaca, New York, played in the Ann Arbor development program. And now he may be a freshman starter for Cornell, which has had the likes of David Lanterview and David McKee and Ben Scrivens. You know, all these guys have come through here and been All-Americans, and he may be getting that. So far in the preseason, Mike Schaefer and his staff haven't thrown it and just granted Isles the job, but they've also given some opportunities to Garmin, the other returning goalie from that team. But Isles blanked the under-18 development team in an exhibition last weekend, and now they've got a pretty exciting start to their season with New Hampshire coming in Friday and RIT on Saturday. Obviously, both NCAA tournament teams last year. New Hampshire knocked the Big Red out of the NCAAs last year, and then RIT, of course, went on to the Frozen Four. So Isles might be the man. He might not, but I think Cornell is going to protect him at least until the holiday, maybe the holiday season, and then if they flat out give him the job, then that'll happen. But for now, it's just interesting to watch. I saw one of the Cornell exhibitions last weekend. Garmin played. I didn't think he was very good. I didn't see Isles play against the under-18s, but all accounts were that he was pretty solid, even though he wasn't tested that much. So, yeah, he'll be. That's another interesting story to watch in ECAC hockey. And Union scoring tons of goals. They're good.
Yep. My Dutch.
You're Dutch. They are. You're Dutch. They lost some leadership. They lost some point guys. But the fact that they've come out so strongly this year and have scored so many goals, they've had four home games and been phenomenal. And their other weekend was up at Alaska. They played a one-goal game against a very good Fairbanks team, and then defeated Anchorage. So they're good, no doubt about it.
Yeah. I think they lost 2-1 to Alaska. That's their lone loss, 5-1. And then their wins here, they've scored 9, 7, 4, 6, and 7.
Yeah, and the 6-7, 7-9 were all at home.
Yes.
They're averaging like 7 goals a night at home. But that won't last, of course. But
I was trying to find some info on Union, and all I could find was bowling scores. I don't know what that was about. Oh, well.
I don't get it.
Go Dutch.
I don't know. Where are you serious?
No, I couldn't find anything. Forget it.
Bowling?
It was misfired. It's all right.
Disregard.
Punt.
Yeah.
quick kick on third down. We'll,
yeah.
We'll turn it over to the D.
We've all had our moments. But yeah, Union's there. They're good. I think Union and Yale are clearly the two best in ECAC hockey at this time of the year. Then Cornell and Rensselaer are probably the next best. And then after that, you don't know. So that's it. Let's deteriorate a little bit.
All right. What
World Series.
You tried to get this in earlier. And
what, deterioration?
Yeah.
So yes,
I brought you back with identifiedness.
We had a deterioration false start. And now we're ready to go for real.
Let's deteriorate about the World Series. Who loves it? I do.
I love it. Absolutely. Two teams have never won it. Texas waited a long time. Good for them.
Well, the Giants won it back in 54.
Well, okay.
Bobby Thompson says.
Not since they stopped playing at the Polo Grounds, but.
Well, yeah, there's that, but.
Yeah, I know.
That's as relevant as the World Series that the Washington Senators won back in the 20s, to Twins fans. I'm just saying.
Good hitting.
Yep.
Recent matchups I haven't been too excited about for the most part. The Yankees, obviously, I don't care for them. I don't know if it's obvious, but
Yankees, Phillies.
Yeah, I think the thing I don't like, this is a little bit off the topic. I think the thing I don't like the most about the Phillies is that they play in a freaking softball park.
Yeah, no kidding.
With 240-foot fences or whatever. But anyways, yeah, I like this. I like this. This is going to be, tomorrow's going to be unbelievable. Wednesday.
Yes. Game one, Cliff Lee, Tim Lincecum, phenomenal.
That's a great rink, too. Any of you been
Texas
to the Bay
or
Area?
San Fran. Oh, yeah, that's right. Brian McCann won that for the... Okay, right. Good. Brian McCann. Right.
Who? What?
All-Star Game. National
League. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. No, but, if anybody out there has been to the Bay Area and has had a chance to see that park, phenomenal place to watch baseball.
Boss, you and I went this summer. We haven't talked about our summer vacation, what I did on my summer vacation.
Yeah, that was good. That was a great use of summertime. Well, it was still spring, but still. Yeah. It was
Boss
a great
I,
use of summertime. We roadied to...
gathered in Pittsburgh, PA. Saw the...
Future Frozen Foresight visit.
Exactly.
Like
we scouted out the Frozen.
It was a work trip.
Yeah.
It was. Wrote it off.
Got it going and... saw some baseball at the old PNC PNC Park, right?
Yes.
And man, the
Pirates are what? Double A? What are they?
Oh man, they are
not good.
Sorry, friends in the Berg.
They are not good at baseball.
Yeah, it's tough.
They have some guys who can play, maybe, but they don't have
which guys.
Jones
is all right. McCutcheon's good.
Jones.
Yeah, I mean, they got a couple of pieces, but they don't have anything to be excited about.
Lasting's Millage. The Millage people.
The Millage people. This fan club in left field.
the highlight of those baseball games was we were there Saturday.
We went for a Saturday night game and a Sunday noon game, and then that's our destination.
And it's a rain delay. So we're sitting there doing nothing. Of course, we're bored. And they're, you know, showing TWIB on the big screen or whatever. And, you know, they have that thing where you can text in your...
Get your message on the
scoreboard. You can send a text and get your message on the scoreboard. And so we're sitting through this lane, rain delay, and we're kind of watching. And all of a sudden, one comes up on the one text comes up on the scoreboard and it says, "It gon' rain."
Ollie Williams at the ballpark.
Williams in the house. It's gonna rain.
It's gonna rain. Yeah, it was
good times. Good times.
We saw a walk-off home run.
We did.
Did you have a sandwich with French fries on it?
Oh, Primanti Brothers! Yes, we did.
That's one of the biggest reasons I'm looking forward to a Frozen Four in the Berg.
It was good.
It was good. It wasn't great.
It wasn't. I'm driving down there just to get a sandwich. Good. It was. If I'm in town, I'll probably get one.
Yeah.
You guys know after I dragged you to a Skyline Chili in Columbus, I'm a sucker for regional food. So you know,
awful.
I'm all about.
It was awful.
Well,
I'll never go to Skyline Chili.
We differ on that point, and that's the only place we differ, sadly.
Yeah, Jess, you and I agree 100%.
Wow,
it's like glad he's drinking an ice cold Grainbelt Premium right now.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, glad you like beer. You'll love this.
You like beer? Painting with the broad brush. You like cold?
You remembered I like TV. Well, on the flip side of that, Gladdy, you'll be happy to know that when I went out in New York City the first night, I ordered a Yingling on behalf of, you know, you showing me the light on that brand. So, good stuff.
Tasty.
Good
stuff. That is...
It's from the Q. Q stands for quality. Can't see to that.
The K could stand for quality if you're stupid. Dexter Manley says the K is for quality.
It's like our old joke about the N on Nebraska's football helmet standing for knowledge.
Knowledge. N-A-L-I-J. Knowledge.
Yeah, I think we've deteriorated.
We have deteriorated.
So we've got the food for Pittsburgh down.
That's just thing. Puck, give us a social and culinary preview of this year's Frozen Four in your village.
Oh, man. Well, you guys have been to St. Paul, and not much has changed, frankly, since you were here.
Really?
Last time.
In Minnesota?
Yeah. The Wild still don't score much, still don't win much.
Bridges are still up?
Bridges are still, well, all but one, but we replaced that.
Sorry, I keep.
But no, it's, you know, good little bar district around the rink, and you know, some good hearty Midwestern fare. They have Grainbelt Premium on tap and other brands. You'll be happy to know.
I'll have a pint of other brands, please.
They just have a tap that says other. Like eight different kegs coming into it.
Well, and as Bus mentioned, our friends at Campus Pizza over on the U of M campus are going to be our hosts for the weekend, and we're all looking forward to that.
Bus, where are we going to your campus, please?
I don't know. We should probably figure that out.
No, we're going.
We are going.
Called okay.
Plums?
Plums. We're going to Plums on Randolph there.
Plums on Randolph.
That Randolph? No. Snelling and...
I think it's Snelling and Randolph.
Snelling and Randolph. Oh. Unless it burned down again or something like that.
Well,
again.
There's still time.
Yeah. Throw some plywood on there.
All those Tommies up there. Yeah, send a shout-out to all your Tommies. Let's say we've got to wrap the podcast with shout-outs.
How about the... Now you're going to send me scrambling for Division One, Division Three football rankings. Because the Tommies are...
Let me guess. Whitewater's one, Mountain Union's two.
Yep. Yeah, something like that. Whitewater's one. St. Thomas is four. And they're clocking in at 8-0. Yeah,
Wesley, three. Thomas, four.
In fact,
Mary Harden Baylor, that chick is 7-0. She's nasty.
She's good.
She is nasty.
She's good.
So, wait, there's a Mary Harden Baylor, and then there's Harden Simmons. Was it like, did Mary Baylor's mom get, like, divorced and remarried to Richard Baylor. Simmons? Or something?
Baylor. I think Baylor Mary had Baylor. A kid with Simmons. Anyways, going back to the Tommies.
Yes.
You know, the big rivalry is with St. John's.
It is.
Of Collegeville, Minnesota. And so the two teams clashed this year in Collegeville. Like something like 15,000 people are at the game.
It's insane.
Goes into OT. St. Thomas scores on their possession. Go up 27-20. St. John's gets their first possession in overtime. Score a TD. 27-26. Guy comes on, kick the extra point. Hits the upright.
Ouch.
Doink. Yep.
Ungood.
Scott Norwood said, you're not good.
Do not do that.
And it should be mentioned that St. Thomas's coach, Glenn Caruso, is Ithaca College.
Ithaca College graduate, yes.
1996.
Exactly.
So.
That's one of those great scenes in American sports is a fall Saturday afternoon in Collegeville watching a St. John's game. Just a great setting, and like Bus said, you know, D3, tiny school, and they pack 15,000 in there on a Saturday afternoon. Great place.
I hate them.
I don't say you have to like the team. It's just a neat setting. I mean,
they cheat.
You know, I thought Lambeau Field was neat, and I hate
their
Lambeau
Field is
a cool place, and I hate everything about the team that plays there. Ditto Yost Ice Arena, but anyway.
St. John's coached Pop Warner. Pop Warner was on his first team.
That's right.
Joe Pa was on his team.
Bronco Nagurski was his fullback.
he spoke to Joe Pa's Pop Warner team.
with the glasses. I think you got a future in this game.
Just know when to walk away. That's the key.
Have you
I like those white socks and black shoes. They're good.
Here's another reason I don't, you know, honestly, I don't have a problem with St. John's. Obviously, they're St. Thomas's hugest rival.
Sure.
And Coach John, how do you pronounce his last name?
Gagliardi.
John Gagliardi.
I know some people say Gagliardi, but I thought it was Gagliardi.
It's Gagliardi.
It's Genoway. I'm sorry.
He's
for now.
He graduated from Colorado College, so that's like double. That's like the double whammy. He coaches at St. John's, and he graduated from Colorado College.
That's right. He's a Colorado guy. I forgot.
Anti-bus.
He is. Oh. If I ever meet him, I'll have to.
We should give context to this because not all the listeners know.
Yeah, I went to
plus undergraduate St. Thomas, graduate
St. Paul, Minnesota, graduate school, Denver University of Denver,
University of Denver, DU.
We don't like CC, and we don't like
St. John's.
So, you know, I had a similar experience to that. I was meeting with one of my son's teachers during parent-teacher conferences last week, and all her room was decorated in all Gopher stuff and Packer stuff. It's like, wow,
what's wrong with you, woman?
Grew up like an Appleton and went to the U, you know. So loves the Gophers, loves the Packers. It's like, yeah, I'm a like.
How's that Gopher thing working out for?
Yeah, wow. If you want to see TCF Bank Stadium, there are suddenly lots of tickets available on any given Saturday.
Oh, please! By the way, everybody out there for the pleasure and excitement of the Inch podcast host Joe Gladyszewski. We want Penn State football to lose the next, like, 2 or 3 weeks. Just go with it. Just go with it.
Gotcha. We'll do what we can for you.
Right. Are you going to
Iowa this week?
Nope.
He's not talking about it.
I'm going to State College, and I would love a very favorable secondary ticket market if Penn State kind of tanks a little bit.
I gotcha.
They're not very good, though.
They're not very good, and they're freshman phenom quarterback who sucks is now hurt, so they're going with the other guy.
He's an Inkster, Michigan boy. Robert Bolden.
We talked baseball.
Right. From Inkster, Michigan. Yeah.
We talked baseball a little bit earlier. Bus, I got to ask your impressions of Target Field. I know you made a trip there at some point this year.
Yeah, it's good.
Looked great on the tube. Looked great on the tube.
Yeah, it's good. It's definitely good. I mean, here's the thing. They played in a toilet for 30 years.
Yep. True.
Yep.
So by comparison.
So, I mean, it doesn't matter. They could be going to play in, you know, an open field with weeds everywhere and, you know, wooden bleachers, and it would still be an improvement.
It's like subsisting on crackers for 20 years and then being had at like a cheese sandwich on white bread.
Yeah, or like a Super America burrito.
Right.
You know, you think you're the king of the world. Anyway, but the one thing that stood out to me, obviously, you know, when you build a new stadium, they pretty much do everything right.
Yep.
You know, regardless of where it is. But haven't
Except
played
for the
that...
new Shea, the place sucks.
Well, yeah. But what do you expect?
I'm just freaking probably
convenient to the airport. It's right there. Anyway,
they're always happy when they leave.
Yeah.
Anyways, I said, you know what? I went with my wife and her brother and his wife, and you know, it was on July 4th. It was hotter than hell out, and you know, we were all sweating.
But what about the game?
I don't know who won. It was the Rays. The Rays won. James Shields.
Oh, nice.
Anyways. But, you know, as I was sitting there, I'm like, I can't believe I'm watching the Twins. I can't, you know, it's like...
Right, right.
It's like a dream. It's like, it's literally like an expansion team showed up. You know, everything is so new, it just doesn't feel like the Twins.
I got a little bit of that feeling not too long ago. I got a tour of the new arena that Minnesota Duluth will open mid-season. And kind of the same way. I mean, it seems like a facility that you would see at Minnesota or Michigan or a bigger program or a higher profile program, but same kind of thing.
How old is the deck, Jess?
The deck opened in 1966.
And it's been the home of Bulldog hockey since then?
Since then, yeah.
No, no kidding.
It's a dump.
Yeah. I'm one of the, you know, there's all this nostalgia now for the deck in Duluth, and I'm one of these
give me a break.
For 20 years has been saying, tear this place down and do something right. So I will not shed many tears.
I walked through the deck. I got the...
That's right.
It wasn't...
That's right.
It was
you got the tour.
It wasn't a hockey weekend, but I went through the deck, and yeah. I mean, it wasn't set up for hockey either, so it made it a little bit hard to figure, but... I mean, I could see it, and I didn't get it either. I just didn't get it.
The location's cool because it's right on the water.
You can be nostalgic for old buildings. I mean, I certainly am in Oswego, and Bus has been to that place. But
yeah, that was.
But it was lousy. But it was yours, you know.
No, it was awesome. That place was unreal. Awesome. Yeah. It had windows for crying out loud.
It did have windows.
They don't build rinks with windows anymore.
In Minnesota. Well, they don't build them, but whatever. But.
Anyways.
All right, let's wrap up this podcast. Let's go around the horn with shout-outs. Taking it back. We've done this about 3 years ago. We're going back this year. Shout-outs. Jess, any shout-outs?
I'm going to be writing about him this week, but a shout-out to JT Brown from Minnesota Duluth, a freshman who is averaging, I think, better than a point per game and had a real nice start for them. So shout-out to him.
What's your shout-out?
Shout out Will Weber from Miami.
Good idea.
Took a Renegade skate blade to the neck and had
How about those pictures, man? Does he have the easiest Halloween costume ever, or what?
All he needs is green paint and a couple of bolts, and he's set.
Yeah.
But wow. Yeah, he got clipped on Saturday night in their game against Northern Michigan. 100 stitches. Cut basically goes from his chin to his ear, and it's pretty gruesome. And
100 stitches and like 15 staples.
And you know, here I was reading the story about it. The stitches are on the inside.
Oh,
I don't know.
Awesome.
I don't know how they do that.
Yeah, well, that's why they're.
But
he's, and we have a podcast.
Shout out to the guys at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center or whatever it was too, man.
Yeah, no kidding. But
good work, guys.
He's fine. He spent the night in the hospital, and hey, chicks dig scars.
Shout out to chicks who dig scars.
Shane Falco said that in the
report. Later he'll be saying that is a very deep cut.
That is a very deep cut, exactly. Great play, Puck. That's a great play.
Well played.
All right, let me...
check in, mate.
Let me close. Anything else, guys? Closing statements?
We need your shout-out.
Well, I'm going to get him my shout-out. Okay, you got the right. A ready?
Yes.
Okay, good. My shout-out, and sorry to be nostalgic here, whatever. Shout-out to Bobby Cox, lifelong Braves fan. It won't be the same. He's absolutely the man, and phenomenal last year. It wasn't, and as I said in 91, it wasn't about the end result. It was about the journey, and this year was a lot of fun. Great summer for Braves fans, and Bobby's one of a kind. He'll never be matched again, and I can't wait to see him in Cooperstown, just up the road from me. So shout out to Bobby Cox.
I have a Bobby Sox. Bobby Cox soundbite from his last series.
Oh boy!
I'm gonna play that.
Go ahead. The kids are playing their tail off. That's not true. Bobby never screwed it up.
No,
never.
Maybe that wasn't Bobby Cox.
That wasn't. But anyway, shout out to Bobby Cox, and thank you for listening to the Inside College Hockey Podcast. For Jess Myers and Mike Adelbus, this is Joe Gladyszewski. We'll be back with another podcast in the near future. Thanks for reading InsideCollegeHockey.com.